welcome back to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host once again, Juanita Watson, and today I have invited on the program author Dirk Eldridge, who has just released his new book titled You've Gotta Fight Back, Winning with Serious Illness, Injury, or Disability. Dirk Eldridge is passionate about writing and the research that goes into his books. His two prior published books concern controversial public policy issues, one on the illicit drug problem and the other on immigration. Dirk's 50-plus years in business have included computer marketing with IBM, retail outlet ownership, startup and sale of a successful wholesale travel business, and a 10-year bank directorship. He served Ronald Reagan as Southern California co-chairman in his initial gubernatorial campaign. Dirk has always been athletically active. He graduated cum laude from the University of Southern California, which he attended on a football scholarship. In addition to scores of speaking engagements to community organizations from Los Angeles to New York City, he has twice served as a guest lecturer aboard Princess Cruises. Dirk has appeared on The O'Reilly Factor, LA Today, and Court TV. He was also featured in a one-hour coast-to-coast special on the Canadian TV concerning their drug problem. Dirk was born in Salt Lake City, Utah, and he and his wife of more than 50 years now live in Long Beach, California. They have two adult children and eight grandchildren. I am so delighted to have Dirk on the program today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Dirk.
Well, thank you, Juanita. That's quite an elaborate introduction.
Well, you've lived quite a life. You really have. You know, this new book that you've just released is very different from your two prior books. The last one out in 2001 titled Crowded Land of Liberty, and then 98 titled Ending the War on Drugs, and they were very controversial, and this is a real departure from that direction. Why did you decide to write this book at this time?
Well, you know, people who know a lot about writing will tell you to write about something that you know a lot about and that you feel strongly about. Those are two pretty much acid tests that any author should pass before he puts words on paper. And I felt like I had something to say about fighting back. I recovered from eight major surgeries, including two open-heart surgeries, and I just felt like I had learned a lot in the process of doing that, and that I wanted to share what I'd learned with other people. So that was what moved me to write it.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's amazing that you had eight major surgeries. When did your whole this all start?
I was 44 when I had my first open heart surgery, and that was kind of a shock because I was had always been a very healthy, active person, and so it was a real setback. But so from that time, I sound like a basket case, but I'm really not. I've been very healthy and very active, and after I recovered from my first open heart surgery, I took up scuba diving just to prove to myself and my family that I was still a whole person.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I've subsequently had my kids, both of them, certified as divers, and they've thanked me many times since.
Oh,
so,
wow.
I sound like I've lived with one foot on a banana peel.
Yeah.
But really, I've had a very active, full, and fun life. It's just that I have some problems with my hereditary genes with respect to heart problems. My mother died at 59 from heart failure, so
that's early.
I inherited a lot of that problem. But anyway, it's been fun.
Yes, yes. Well, you sound like a true inspiration to your kids, and I know anyone reading this book will definitely hear that. As well, do you think before your first surgery at age 44, do you think you were well prepared for what illness, what, you know, the emotional ride and everything that comes up around it? Were you prepared, or has this been a process for you throughout your surgeries?
Well, I think it's been a process. You can't, I don't think anyone can really prepare themselves for that. I just just handle it as it came along. And I tried to think through what I was doing and how I was doing it. And those in that thought process and in that process of coping with the various problems that I came up with, I used a technique that really boiled down to quite simple, and that is that when you're coming back from an illness, you try to resolve to make some progress every day. Maybe not a lot, but some. And so that's what I did. And I remember one day I would walk a little every day after my first heart surgery, and I looked and I said, I decided that each day I'd walk a little further. Well, one day I was feeling particularly good, and I walked so far that I got a long ways from home, and I had trouble getting back.
Oh, no.
So that was one of the lessons that I learned, is that to do a little more every day, but use your head. You know,
yeah.
Don't overextend.
Yes.
Don't do more than you should. And those are kind of subtle. That was one of a number of subtle lessons that I learned that I wanted to share with people.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about this book, You've Got to Fight Back. You know, whether it's autobiographical, I know that you have other people's stories in it. Tell us a little bit about this book.
Okay. Well, in the first place, it is not at all autobiographical on a percentage basis. The percentage of pages that I spent talking about myself is, you know, less than 1%. So it's just not largely autobiographical at all.
Mm-hmm.
It centers around more than a dozen people that I was able to contact and who were willing to talk to me in depth about their, you know, medical histories. And some were people who had recovered from major illnesses to varying degrees. Some were families of people who had passed away. And they talked to me about how the last 1 to 6 years, you know, were spent, mm-hmm. and how they maximized the value of that time. Others were people who were caregivers. There's a lot of space given to caregivers in the book, because caregivers in our society are largely ignored,
yeah.
and they're not given nearly the respect and concern that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
So I spend a lot of time on caregivers, both professional, you know, my doctors. I'm blessed with two wonderful doctors. One is an internist, the other is a cardiologist, and they're fantastic people.
Mm-hmm.
And they share a lot of the credit for the healthy, vigorous life that I've been able to lead in spite of my various heart problems. So I'm a big fan of caregivers, both family caregivers and professional.
Mm-hmm.
And I spend a lot of time talking about them in the book, because I think people should understand what caregivers go through and, you know, what they endure and what they contribute to the whole process.
Yes, they have a major contribution, and a lot of times it is really true. Their journey goes completely under the radar. You know, most of the focus is on the person with the illness.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well said.
Yes. So with the high prevalence that we're seeing with illness in our world today, do you think that there really is an increasing need for the message that you are putting forth in your book?
Oh, no question about it, Juanita, because people are living longer.
Yeah.
And as you live longer, you encounter more, you know, medical challenges. It's just a fact of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I think that there are many more people now than say 20 or 30 years ago that have to cope with these kinds of issues, and I'm hopeful that this book will help some of those people cope more effectively and come out with a better result at the other end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. I imagine statistically that basically we will all be touched directly or indirectly by serious illness or injury or disability in our lifetime.
No question about it.
Yeah.
It's interesting in this book, Juanita, that every one of these people that I wrote about, and there are 13 of them who are interviewed in depth and included in the book, all 13 of those people were either friends of mine or friends of friends.
Oh, is that right?
So I did not have to, you know, go nationwide, you know, to
mm-hmm.
or even statewide
mm-hmm.
to contact these people. And these are interesting stories. These are important stories that wouldn't be in the book if they didn't contain some significant lesson.
Message, that's right. I was wondering about the people that you did decide to include and why it was these people, and then what kind of research you actually had to do. But obviously these were people in your circle.
Well, yeah, kind of a broad circle. Mm-hmm. As I said, they're either friends or friends of friends. But, yeah, you don't have to cast a very large net to come up with people who are coping.
Yeah.
And with significant issues, and that's, I think, that this book and the source material that's in it proves that point.
So what are some of the afflictions that these people have dealt with?
Let's see, there are two stories that center around ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of, there are two or three cancer patients. There's one who died of lupus, which is sometimes a very benign illness and sometimes a deadly illness. It depends on the particular type of lupus you have.
Yeah.
And there was an accident victim two accident victims actually who sustained life-changing spinal cord injury. And it goes across the board. Just about every kind of medical problem, major classification of medical problem that you can imagine,
mm-hmm.
is in the book.
Mm-hmm. Now, was there any type of pattern of emotional response that is typical when people are faced with these types of adversities? Did you see any of that?
Well, I tried to focus on people who had handled things successfully and somewhat creatively. And I would say the common thread, the one that keeps recurring, is a real steely, hard desire to win,
mm-hmm.
to make the best of a bad situation. Because not everybody won. A lot of these stories are about people who died.
Yeah.
But the successful part, the useful part, is how their family, in the case of the people who passed away, how their family coped with that last. In one case it was 6 years, in another case it was 1 year, and there's some enormously important lessons that can be learned from how people handle that situation. And let's face it, we're all going to be involved with that kind of situation,
mm-hmm.
to one extent or to one role or another.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that those were important stories to tell.
So tell me a little bit about attitude and the emphasis that maybe gets put on attitude as a choice, and how our happiness or these people's happiness really was a choice for them to actually maintain that happy state of mind and not look at their particular set of circumstances and become depressed about it.
Yeah, attitude is the common thread throughout the book.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I start page one, chapter one, of talking about the importance of attitude, and that, you know, every day you can adopt whatever attitude you want to, a good one or a bad one. Every day is different, and every day is your choice. And that's how we talk about that in the book. You make the choice every day what attitude, what approach you're going to take to life in that day.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the lesson I learned, and that I wanted to pass along, was that when you're in the fighting back or recuperating stage, or even in the coping stage of the final months or years, every day is a separate day, and every day is a separate challenge. And the ones who really got the most out of life, both of the families and the people who were passing on, the ones that really got the most out of it were the ones who had the best attitude.
Yeah.
It's just a one-for-one relationship.
Yes. I love that emphasis that you put on just taking it day by day, because that really keeps you in the moment. You're not,
yes.
you know, projecting your fears of the future, what's going to happen, you know. And I imagine that sometimes you do. It's just moment to moment as
right.
well.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. And, it's a good, another example of that is the Alcoholic Anonymous credo, one day at a time.
Yes.
And it's a little different problem, but yet it isn't all that different, because alcoholism is an illness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people can disagree with that in varying degrees, but it really is. And that's what they talk about. Look at it one day at a time. Don't try to solve the whole problem off into the distant future. Mm-hmm. Take it today, then the next day, and the next day. And if you win each of those battles, you're going to win the war.
Yes, yes. Do you talk about various self-help groups in this book? Like you just mentioned AA, is there any?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. Self-help groups are a big part of the book. Both the formal ones, like AA, which is probably the best known example, and the informal ones. People have a tendency, you know, they meet people in the waiting room of the doctor's office, or they form little ad hoc groups to talk about common problems with cancer. Out in Orange County, there's at least one group that I know of for ALS sufferers.
Mm-hmm.
And their families. Mm-hmm. Here again, the families, particularly in the case of ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, they pay a terrible price.
Yeah.
And you know, the families are due every bit as much sympathy and understanding as is the patient themselves, because it's a disease that involves everyone that's even associated with the patient.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information.
And now back to Inside Scoop Live with your host, Juanita Watson.
I imagine that the results for healing, you know, for the individual and the family getting through this, I imagine that really suffering in silence does no service to healing their illness, you know, and that it really is important to get out, get the support from groups, talking with other people, getting those feelings and all of that out. I mean, that's got to be a very crucial part of the process.
No question. The old saw about, you know, we're all in the same boat. That's true in life in general, and it's even more true if there can be degrees of truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's even more true when someone's suffering from a medical malady.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing more comforting to know that, hey, I'm not the only person who's walked this path. Here are, you know, a half a dozen or a half a hundred other people in this same room that are all going through the same thing. That's very empowering. That's very encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
To the person who's on the spot.
Now, I know as well that humor plays a big part in a number of the stories.
Yes.
And kind of your message. So tell us a little bit about how that does manifest in these stories, and then what part it has and had in your own journey with your illnesses.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, personally, I didn't talk a whole lot about that. But the humor is important to all of us in any situation. If you lose your sense of humor, you're in deep trouble, because and particularly life is complicated and many faceted as it is today. You've got to keep your sense of humor, and I made a conscious effort with every person that I profiled in this book to find some humor in their situation. And it's not always easy. I mean, how much humor is there in an ALS patient?
Yeah.
And yet we found it. And I relate those stories every chance. You know, if it's as long as it's not distasteful, I included it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some really good laughs in the book, and they're in there for a purpose, to illustrate that if you lose your sense of humor, you've lost a good part of the battle. And most of these people didn't. They all, almost, not all, but most of the 13 people that I interviewed came up with some really good humorous incidents that they could recall. Mm. And I can remember even in the telling where they were, you know, laughing, or their survivors were laughing in the telling.
So healthy to laugh and have humor in life, that's for sure. Why did you decide in this book to mix people with disabilities and then those with illness?
Well, that was kind of a long time coming. I didn't start off with that intention, but as I got into it, I realized that, hey, you know, if you're feeling sorry for yourself, just to pick one malady within a malady, that's not all that different for, you know, a person with a permanent injury, say a spinal cord injury, than a person with something that they are probably going to recover from. I mean, that, you know, self pity or self-loathing or whatever is the same problem in both of those cases. And the result, the way out is the same, and that is to get your head on straight, look at the positive things, and move on. And that's no different if you have a permanent spinal cord injury or if you have a serious illness. And I never really thought about that, but it's true that those and there are some profound differences. Obviously, if you have a like one of the people that I have in there is a girl that I've known since the day she was born. She's now 60 years old, rather 50 years old, and she's a quadriplegic. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, she has problems that a person with almost any other malady doesn't have, but she also has some similar problems that are similar to other people that are fighting back. So I was struck by the fact that the two groups can learn from one another. And indeed they do.
Yes, absolutely. That's a good point. So does spirituality and religion play a part in this book at all? And how important do you feel it is to have some sort of a spiritual grounding when you're dealing with illness and disability?
I'm not a religious person myself, but most of my family is deeply religious. My two kids and my wife are very religious people. And I envy that. Mm. I don't talk down to it. I don't discount it. I envy it, but it's not me. So I tried in the book, I stayed away from the preaching, so to speak, and I tried to talk about how this person that I was writing about, how their religion, if it played any role at all, and sometimes it didn't, but if their religion played a role in their recuperation or their fight, I tried to tell that story, mm-hmm. and I didn't tell it in a the Sermon on the Mount.
Sure.
I just said, here's the way this person felt, and here's the way they reacted, and here's what they think it did for them, and so forth. And then I let the reader draw their own conclusions. I don't take a position on the spirituality, pro or con. I simply tell the story as it was told to me.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite story in this collection?
Not really. I've thought about that, and I've been asked that question before, but each story is in the book for a purpose, and I felt like each story contributed something to the overall fabric of the story, or each of the fabric of the book, and that each story was in there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really don't have a favorite. Some people I have warmer feelings about than others simply because of the way they handle it or, you know, my past relationship with them. But, no, I couldn't pick out a favorite. You sound skeptical.
No, no, I'm not skeptical. I mean, they've all got an incredible message in themselves, so I understand what you're saying. You know, I'm interested in your title, you've got to fight back. And I'm wondering how important you think it is to kind of develop or cultivate somewhat of a warrior spirit. You know, you're talking about fighting back and winning with serious illness, injury, or disability. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm an old athlete, and accent on the old. I don't think anybody's very good at anything that they don't put their heart and soul into. And, whether you're talking about a game of tennis or golf or football or whatever it is, if you don't really care deeply about doing your best and hopefully winning, you're probably not going to do a great job. And so that's kind of the athlete in me, the warrior in me, you say. And I think that people who are successful, happy people share that ethos, and they might express it differently or manifest it differently. But I think anyone who's going to do well in life has got to have some fight back in them.
Mm-hmm. I think so. You know, with your history being active with the football and then the scuba, being a scuba diver after your first heart operation, and I know you enjoy tennis and golf, how close do you feel the relationship is between staying active and maintaining a positive, healthy outlook on life? Do you think that it's important for us to be active like that?
Oh, I think it's everything. Mm. I think it's everything. I really... even though I spent a good deal of time writing, which is essentially a sedentary exercise, I have to move. I have to play some golf each week. As I've gotten older, there are fewer things I can do. It's been a long time since anybody called me up and said, "Let's go play football."
Yeah, right.
But I think you have to stay active at something physical, even if it's just walking.
Yeah.
I just think it's so important. And I have friends who are older than I am who play a wonderful game of golf. I don't. I play golf, but I don't play a wonderful game of golf.
Mm-hmm.
But I know people who are into their 80s who are still playing excellent golf. And that doesn't happen just because you're happen to be a gifted athlete. It happens because they work at it.
Yeah.
And they stay active and they make themselves get out there and practice, and they make themselves get out there and play,
mm-hmm.
and because they have the fight back spirit.
Yes, well put, Dirk. How can listeners today find out more about you? What's your website?
Well, thank you for asking that.
Yeah,
I have a website. It's fairly new. It's www.booksbydirk.com.
Okay.
And Books by Dirk, of course, is all one word.
Mm-hmm.
.com. And that's got all three of my books are profiled there, and how to order them is also built in.
Now, can listeners purchase them right from your site, or can they get them through online and local booksellers? Where is your book being out?
Well, they can get them through the website. That's
okay.
The easiest and quickest way.
Okay.
You can get all three of them from the major bookstores, at least.
Wonderful.
And they don't stock them. In fact, particularly the older ones, they don't stock. But they can get them. It takes a week or two. But I recommend just going on the website and using Amazon,
mm-hmm.
Or the publisher. That's the quickest way.
Mm-hmm. Well, our time is kind of coming to an end here, Dirk, and I just I thank you so much for this interview. It's been great, and wanted to just allow you to share any final thoughts and maybe once again reiterate these ingredients that really build the healthy mindset when you're dealing with a serious health challenge.
Well, I thank you for asking that, and thank you for giving me kind of the last word here.
Sure.
I think the most important thing is a person's attitude. If they get down on themselves, if they get down on this adventure we call life, they're going to get back what they put in, which is, in that case is not much. But if they work at it and maintain a positive attitude, they can really reap a whole lot of better results than they will with a negative, why me, how did this happen to me kind of attitude. And I love the Alcoholics Anonymous mantra, one day at a time. I just think that makes so much sense because it's like anything. When I quit smoking, you know, I thought, gosh, can I really go the rest of my life without a cigarette? And the thing that helped me get over that was one day at a time. You know, this is Wednesday, and I'm not going to have a cigarette today, and I don't worry about Thursday or Friday. I just worry about Wednesday. And I think that's a very important aspect to getting over any major malady, is take it a little bit at a time and try to win the individual battles. And if you win the individual battles, you'll win the war.
Great, great. You know, I actually want to squeeze one more question in here that I really wanted to ask you about. So we have a secondary final thought. Tell us a little bit about the triumvirate of happiness that you talk about.
Well, I read that somewhere. I did not make that up, but I don't know who to attribute it to, so it's kind of what I call an anonymous aphorism or something.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the triumvirate of happiness is someone to love, something to do, and something to look forward to. And if a person has those three aspects to their life, they've got life pretty well figured out, I think.
I love that. That's great. Well, Dirk, it's been so wonderful talking with you today. Much success to you with You've Got to Fight Back. It's a great, great collection, and we wish you much success. So take care, and it's been great talking with you.
Well, thank you, Juanita. I've enjoyed it very much, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. All right, Dirk. There you go, listeners. I hope you've enjoyed this interview. What a great time talking with Dirk. This is just a wonderful, wonderful book. We strongly suggest you check out his website, booksbydirk.com, as well as he had mentioned, his books are available through Amazon. But do check out his website because there is additional information there. For more on Dirk Eldridge and You've Got to Fight Back, Winning with Serious Illness, Injury, or Disability, you can go to readerviews.com where you can find a recent book review. So thanks again for listening to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.